You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner Thursday, April 15th, 2021. Follow on Twitter at ChickenXDinner, Instagram at ChickenDinnerSP, and smash the button so you get this mother clucker once it goes live. We will talk to Dave Sharapin, longtime odds maker in Curacao and Las Vegas. He was behind the counter for a lot of years, and he saw a lot of shit. Dave's also the host of the Cash Consideration Show and one of the best storytellers in the sports betting space. So about 28 minutes with Dave Sharapin coming up later on in the show. Record check 115, 105, and 4 up 0.8 units. And I wanted to start sort of talking about the three plays we made on Wednesday. And I wanted to grade the losses. Had a pretty easy winner with the Cubs and the Brewers, first five under. And then two losses. Yankees minus 122. Now, there was a pitching change. And the line went up to Yankees minus 143. I was actually looking at the Yankees at a pretty short price because I liked their matchup against Stripling. But Stripling got scratched, and they put in a new guy. And I talked to a couple guys, and they said, yeah, it's probably still good. New York led 1-0. New York led 3-2. New York led 4-3. Bo Bichette hits a walk-off homer, bottom of the ninth, and Toronto wins 5-4. Now, that's a loss, and there are no excuses when you lose. I try not to make them. But you're talking about a situation where the Yankees led for more than half the game, and you lose on one mistake by one pitcher in one inning. And that's sort of tough. I thought that was a 50-50 game. Worst part is, rather than lose it at minus 122, you now lose it at minus 143. That sucks, but you're close. That's not a bad beat, but it's a tough loss. Then you have the Indians and the White Sox, under 7.5, and pretty good juice, too. We got minus 105. It closed 15 or 20. Closing line value, another trophy. White Sox score 6 runs in the first inning. You're like, ah, what a shitty pick. 2 more in the third. Sheesh. There you go. That's 8. Thing is, nobody scored the rest of the way. Sox win 8-0. And oh, by the way, Carlos Rodon threw a fucking no-hitter. The 20th in White Sox history. If I would have told you before the game, hey, we're going to go under in a baseball game where one of the pitchers is going to take a perfect game into the ninth and throw a no-hitter, how much money would you bet on the under? Those are both, I would argue, tough losses. The second one, much tougher. Because the handicap was, I thought Rodon was going to pitch well against this Indians lineup. I had no idea he was going to do what he did. Sox get there by themselves. So in a game that's 8-0 in the third inning, looks like a horrible pick. But it's 8-0 after 9, and one of the guys throws a no-hitter. How do you assess that? If it's you, is that something that you're okay with? I'm very content with picking an under in a game where one of the guys throws a no-hitter. There's a lot of variance in baseball, and there's a lot of wild stuff that happens. It's one of the hardest sports to bet. I will rehash the quote from Nick Bogdanovich at William Hill. You need a glass of whiskey and a revolver to bet this every day, to bet baseball. It's very humbling. But I'm feeling like I'm getting close. I am so damn competitive when it comes to this stuff because I know I'm better than this run. It's why I'm sitting at the screen at 7:30 in the morning on the East Coast because that's when the board is silent. Nobody has started the move yet. I like seeing where it's at and where it's going. I just hate this run. But I'm feeling like there's something coming. And one of my buddies, Todd, he texted me the other day and said, keep firing the plays. The plays are good. The results are bad. And then he said something that made me feel really good. He said, the books better prepare for what's on the other side of this run. Because it ain't going to be this way forever. and the following month or 2 months are going to be very profitable. And that makes me feel a little bit better. All right, we have to talk about listed pitchers. There was a lot going on social media yesterday, and this stems from Tuesday's picks where we had the Brewers money line and run line against the Cubs. And I didn't even realize it when I looked at the final score that there was a pitching change in the game. One of my buddies saw the Chicken Dinner tweet on Wednesday morning and said, hey, those weren't losses. There was a pitching change, especially the run line bet, he said. Oh, nice. So I go back and I see there's a scratch. And lo and behold, the bets were voided. And the money goes back into your account or there's no record of a loss, essentially. Turns out, DraftKings and FanDuel were grading those bets as losses. And our listeners are sliding into the DMs like, wait a minute, you just tweeted about refunds or canceled bets, and they'd send me a screenshot of a DraftKings or a FanDuel bet where it says loss on a run line bet. And these bets were made early in the morning, well before the pitching scratch. So I said, well, wait a minute. I said, they definitely have to give you back the run line bet, because run line bets and total bets are directly correlated with the starting pitchers at the time of the bet. Where I'm from, a pitching change voids all bets. Money line, total, run line, all of it. And if you have a 3-team parlay, it goes down to a 2-team parlay. If you have a 6-team parlay, it goes down to a 5-team parlay. But all of it gets voided. Everything related to that bet with the pitching change gets voided and the money goes back. I remember being like 20 years old and winning a Wrigley Field total bet that got bonged. One of the starting pitchers got scratched like 45 minutes before the game, and the total went from 10 to 11 or something, and the game was 12-8 final. It didn't matter. It was one of those days where the winds are howling out to left center at 20 miles an hour. I didn't care who was pitching. Didn't matter. I bet over 10, but the bet didn't comp because I didn't recall and leave the message. Okay, fine. I learned my lesson on that day, and I learned what the house rules were for that certain book, so this didn't happen again. Apparently, DraftKings and FanDuel were grading lots of those Brewer bets as losers, which many of you pointed out, and I appreciate you because y'all know I love taking people to task when I see the integrity of sports betting being compromised. Ed Murphy is a loyal listener to the show, Chicago guy. He sent in a message to DraftKings customer support. And people answering the customer support things, those are not people in the trading room. Those are likely interns or people under the age of 25 that more or less don't understand sports betting. They have a list of responses. They have things to sort of point to and direct to, but they don't know what's going on. So Ed sends a message to DraftKings. Hello, I placed a bet on the Brewers run line for yesterday's 4-13, that's April 13th, for yesterday's Cubs game against the Brewers. However, there was a last-minute pitching change, so my understanding is the bet should have been voided. Thank you for looking into this. Chris T. from DraftKings on the response about 2 hours later. Thank you for reaching out to us. I would be happy to explain. The listed pitcher is for money line bets only. Since you have a run line bet, the pitching change that happened before the game does not reflect your bet. What? If you have any further questions or concerns, please don't hesitate to reach back out to us. And I said, get the fuck out. Did they just tell you that the money line bet is listed, but the run line bet isn't? That makes zero sense. In no world is that possible. So then he responds to DraftKings with a screen grab of the board. Arrieta, Burns. Both of their names under the Cubs and the Brewers, respectively. And then there are three columns. If you know DraftKings, you know the way it's set up. The teams and pitchers on the left, and then the bets on the right. Column 1, run line. Column 2, total runs. Column 3, money line. With, again, both pitchers listed on the app. So Ed responds with the post of the graphic, I'm sorry, ? How does changing the starting pitcher affect the money line any more than it affects the run line? In your app, the listed pitcher is shown for the run line as well as the money line. Parentheses, see attached. I love that. I'm really confused how changing the listed pitcher can affect the money line enough that the bet should be voided, but not the run line. I said, all right, well, I'm definitely talking about this on the show tomorrow. And my response to Ed was, in the DMs, definitely some idiot responding, ask for a manager. And then I said, all run line bets are based on starting pitcher. Especially if the money line bet gets bonged, you have to bong the run line. So Ed goes back and forth with DraftKings, and finally they respond and say, thank you for following up with us here at DraftKings. I'd be glad to look into this for you. I'm sorry for the unfortunate circumstances you have encountered on this wager. I can understand the frustration that comes along with it. In this case, whoever is chosen to be the starting pitcher of either team has no relevance on how this wager is settled. With the wager being settled, there is really nothing further we can do. The decision is final. I apologize for any inconvenience this has caused. If you have any additional questions, please do not hesitate to ask. So I'm like, holy shit. So they're really just going to say, nope. Now, you know, they're not going to do anything for Ed, and that's unfortunate for Ed. But the least we can do is help you understand that if the money line is voided because of a pitching scratch, the run line has to be voided. Their house rules just say money line, even though they don't give the option to do a listed pitcher money line or an action money line. It's a crock of crap. And it's very unfortunate that this is how they handle business, because I think a lot of these American books do it the right way, but some of them, they take stances on things like this where the old guard has always been pitching change, bets return, bets voided. That's what I don't understand. We used to call, when bookies had the phone numbers, you would call those numbers and essentially you'd get a voice message of all the games that they were taking that day with the Lions. So they'd say, Cubs, Reds, Wood against Jamie Moyer. Or they'd say, Diamondbacks, Giants. I don't even know. Randy Johnson against Barry Zito. Whatever. And they would give you the line and the total. Which at that point in time was before, you know, books cared about line moves. You could bet a favorite at minus 125 and then it'd be 145 3 hours later. But you got the line, whatever the line was. But the corner bookies and the offshore markets were always good about stuff like this. They had compassion for the player. They respected the player. There was a trust there on both sides. You paid on time, you got paid on time. If a bet got canceled, you got your money back. If a pitcher got scratched, the bet got voided. And a local guy would go, all right, yeah, no problem. And he might even credit the account for the inconvenience. Here's a $100 free play or whatever. A lot of these American books, unfortunately, they care about the customer acquisition, but they don't care about anything once you're in the door. And that's unfortunate. The model is grown that way. That's how it's been shaped. We're going to give you $600 in free bets if you sign up. But then a pitcher gets scratched and they're trying to dink and dunk you on a $100 bet. It's bad. It looks bad. Bad optics. They couldn't wait to get you in the door, though. Couldn't wait to give you that free $2,000 in free play. Couldn't wait to offer you a boost, an odds boost. Couldn't wait to advertise their 16 parlay. But when it comes to wins and losses and doing business the right way, sometimes this shit gets really cloudy. Please know your house rules going forward. That's all I ask of you. If you're going to bet, know this and remember this. Please know your house rules. Joe Ostrowski had a great tweet yesterday about shopping around at Joe0670. Quote, can't stress shopping around enough. Corbin Burns strikeout prop is 8.5 plus 112 on one site and over 9.5 minus 124 on another. Okay. We're going to add a run and then we're going to make the over the favorite. That makes no sense, but that's a different conversation for a different day. Joe adds, shop around, especially with props and futures. And he's totally right. Burns now struck out 10 guys, 10 Cubs. Shocker. So all the overs hit, but that's a great example of how price shopping can make you a more successful bettor. If you look at your screen or your apps or whatever, and you see over 8.5 plus 12, If it lands 9, you bet 100, you win 112. The other side, over 9.5, minus 124. You bet 100, over 9.5. Well, you bet 124 to win 100. You lose 124. People tell me all the time, well, it's just a half run. Doesn't matter. It's just a couple points. If that's your mindset, you're going to lose. Value those precious half runs and hooks. Please understand the importance. And you get plus money to go over 8.5, but you got to lay money to go over 9.5. Shop around. And I wrote a column about this on Nesson.com. Nesson.com/odds. The Red Sox odds have been completely slashed across the American sportsbook scene. They're hot. They're 9-3. They're in first place in the East. And their prices to win the division, the pennant, and the title have been whacked. And that's what you have to do as a bookmaker, because bettors react to what they've seen. Obviously, they start betting, liability builds, and you have to shorten the odds. Before opening day, Boston was 20-1 to win the American League East. To win the American League East right now, on a Thursday morning, Red Sox, 8-1 at BetMGM, 750 DraftKings, 7-1 points bet, $6 at FanDuel, plus 450 at William Hill. Where are you going? If you have $100 and you want to bet the Red Sox to win the division, why the fuck would you go to William Hill? That 100 at William Hill makes you 450. The 100 at BetMGM makes you 800. Before the season, the Red Sox were 35-1 to win the American League. 9-1 in Vegas at the Westgate. Plus 1275 at Circa. 20-1 points bet William Hill. 22-1 BetMGM DraftKings. 25-1 FanDuel WinBet. Where are you going? 100 makes you 9 at Westgate. 2500 at FanDuel. And the Red Sox were as high as 70-1 to win the World Series. 20-1 at the Westgate, 30-1 at Circa, 40-1 DK points bet William Hill, 50-1 BetMGM FanDuel WinBet. As you can see, or as you can hear, the proper price shopping could make you so much extra bread. Always be shopping. Futures betting is about the right team, the right time, and the right price. The last thing you want to do is pass on a chance to bet the Sox right now, 7-1, 8-1 to win the AL East. Then in mid-August, when they're fighting for first, go, oh, I like the Red Sox at 2-1 and bet it. You're potentially costing yourself hundreds of dollars. So if you believe that the Red Sox, or any team for that matter, can contend for a division crown, a pennant, a World Series, don't wait. Every dollar matters, and you have to get the best price. And the best part about betting on a team like the Red Sox to win the World Series at 50-1, better than 20-1, obviously, 50-1 at three places, 20-1 in Vegas, if they get into the playoffs, that number is all of a sudden, you have 50, now it's 15 or 20. If they win the American League East, the number might be 12. So now if you're holding 50 and the market is 12, you can hedge, you could sell, you could get creative. A lot of times in futures, the team you bet doesn't even have to win. It just puts you in a great position to profit no matter what. And that's the goal with futures. But again, that's just one example of one team in the markets to win division, title, and pennant. That's it. Shopping around. Baseball on Thursday, you won't probably get a chance to get this in, but I did tweet it out. So if you're following at @ChickenXDinner, went under 3.5 first five Mets and Phillies. It is Eflin and DeGrom, went under 3.5. And market's starting to move down now, 3.5 under 30. I see a 3 at the Circa. 3 over 30. Well, 3 over 30 at Westgate. But a couple books still have 3.5 under 15, a couple 3.5 under 20. It's DeGrom. We talked about DeGrom on Tuesday. Guy is just, he's lights out. I like the Braves, but that is way too steep for me. Not laying 170 or 180. That's a bad habit in baseball. We've talked about this, how the juice kills. I will be looking at the Braves, though, this weekend. They have a three-game set at Wrigley, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I will be checking out that and see what prices I can get with the Cubbies back home. And it makes sense, again, to go under Cleveland, Chicago, 7.5, but I don't know. Market actually opened 8. A couple 8s available, but mostly 7.5s now. And you missed the move there, I think. I don't really want to go under 7.5 when I had that hook. I could have gone under 8. So I'm passing there. Not a big card for me today, and that's okay. We'll get into more over the weekend. And I remind you about the Cub offense. I said over the final 15 games in April, I think it's a good thing to fade them. They are 1-2 since our last show. One of those wins, they won 3-2. Well, the only win, they won 3-2. They hit a two-run homer in the 8th inning. Cubs now 5-7, and here's the list coming up. 3 against the Braves, 3 against the Mets, 3 against the Brewers, 4 at Atlanta. Now, because they're at home for the next 9 games, they're not going to be that big of an underdog. You're not going to see the Cubbies plus 140, 50, 60 at home. I just don't see it. I don't. Now, they face DeGrom. The Mets couldn't be higher than 170 with DeGrom on the road. That couldn't happen. Pete Rose is becoming a sports betting tout with UPickTrade. You may remember UPickTrade from their brief partnership with the Vegas Golden Knights. Remember, it's that pick selling service based in Mexico. They became an official partner with VGK for like 3 days or so, maybe 4 or 5 seconds. They partnered with the Golden Knights in February, and then days after the deal was announced, the Knights terminated the partnership with no explanation. Anyways, you can now get Pete Rose's picks for $89 a month. David Purdom had the story on ESPN Chalk. There was a quote in there from Rose. By me working with UPick, I'm not hurting Rob Manfred. I'm not trying to show him up. I'm trying to make a living like everyone else. Picking games on UPick don't make me a bad person. It's not me trying to give baseball the black eye because I'm not. I love baseball. That poor guy. I know you don't care. He's a jerk. He's an asshole. Whatever. That guy should be in the Hall of Fame one way or the other. He should. If you want to put him in a bad guys or a cheater's wing or a gambling wing, whatever. Ignoring him in the history of baseball, I think, is a mistake. But this is not a show about, you know, character or, you know, obviously I'm into sports betting, so I don't think Pete Rose should be out of the Hall of Fame. But you could tell that this thing is still eating him alive at 80. That poor guy. I remember getting his autograph. God, this is back in 2004. And he was a shell of himself. 15, 16 years later, he's selling picks for $89 a month. Damn. Quickly, two more things before we get to Dave Sherapin. David Purdom also had this tweet. PGA Tour and DraftKings Sportsbook at TPC Scottsdale announced they will be open year-round and feature in-person betting windows. Hey, I may be heading to TPC Scottsdale for the next event there to live bet the event while I'm there. That would be wild. And a bettor at MGM had a six-figure run line bet on the Dodgers against the Rockies Wednesday night. $127,000 on the Dodgers minus 1.5 to win $102,000. Dodgers led 3-2 after 5. Dodgers lead 3-2 after 7. Zach McKinstry cracked a solo shot bottom of the 8th. Dodgers up now 4-2. Leadoff walk, top of the 9th. Remember, this is Dodgers' run line. Have to win by more than 1.5 runs. Leadoff walk. And you can already see the better balled up in the fetal position. Because this ends 4-3, Dodgers, the bet loses. Strikeout, 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 ball game. This bettor went from losing $127,000 to winning $102,000. That is a $229,000 swing. Imagine watching that game with that person. I'd give anything to be in that position. Just to be with the person. Because the next 12 hours are going to be a roller coaster. Joining us on Chicken Dinner for the second time, Dave Sherapin, host of the Cash Consideration Show, longtime Las Vegas odds maker. He spent time in Curacao, too, and I have a Curacao question for you. But first, Dave, I wanted to ask if you are, in fact, the biggest fan in the world of The Bartender.
Oh, my goodness, Sammy. First of all, honored to be a repeat guest of the dinner. I've shortened it to the dinner. The bartender, yeah. I mean, I would buy shirts. I would wear hats. I'd love to do both. The bartender plays have taken over not just the chicken dinner audience, but it is content to no end. And my man I got people on buttons for the bartender place. Like they just want to know when the bartender makes a play. So am I the biggest fan? Hell yeah, I'm one of the biggest fans for sure.
So when you say you got buttons, are you saying that we're almost like auto betting? I don't know that you have a bot set up back in Pittsburgh, but you have a direct line to the crew back home?
There are guys that have been asking me for picks. I mean, I swear to God, since I'm like a little kid. And like based on where I've been and all the things and people that I talk to, whatever, like they just like, hey, anytime you get a really good play, text me or call me. And I started with this bartender thing in football season. And for those of you that missed football season, it was glorious. And they were like a lot of no doubters. So word got around that, hey, Dave talks to a guy who has a guy that's a play against.
Who has a bartender.
Well, they don't know all of that. But, you know, because these guys don't even, I think they still got flip phones. And, you know, most of them I have to call because, you know. So I have guys that, no kidding, I send them a text. I'm like, the guy's on, you know, NC State. Oh, and they just call their guy or push their buttons or whatever. So literally it's morphed into Dave's got a guy out in Vegas that he got and blah, 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 and an immediate autoplay. So, yes, not just me. We're spreading the bartender's wealth a little bit.
The origin of the bartender is actually based around a guy who can't pick a fucking winner to save his life. But you know guys like this. Didn't you have guys when you're behind the counter in Vegas, you knew when they walked up before they even opened their mouth, you knew it was probably a loser?
Oh, man. One of the best of all time. I mean, all time was when I was at the M and I was at the counter and he was a sweetheart of a guy. I'm talking like one of the nicest guys you could ever meet. And he was a stagehand on one of the shows at the MGM. And he would come in and put his plays in before he went to work every day to go work on the show, whatever he did, build stages, flip lights. I don't know exactly what he did to this day. But when he came in, it was money. And it was hard because he was a post-time guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, guys that bet at the track, like the horses are getting in the gate and they're giving you, you know, this dollars, the 10-cent superfecta with eight different legs. Like, so it was a lot of late stuff. But I started to realize early, this guy can't win. He just doesn't win. And if you were holding a ticket already on a team that he bet, it was just like the movie Bronx Tale. I mean, he was the mush. You just ripped it up. You're just like, I got no shot. So, of course, yeah, there's guys like that all the time, man. And I say it, Sammy, I would rather a good fade than a sharp guy because the sharp guys lose too. I mean, but the fade, we're talking like 75 to 80%. They just don't win. And they keep coming. The only thing, you know, is when they quit betting and then you're in trouble. You got to start doing the work on your own.
I don't claim to be a sharp bettor. I'll let others decide yes or no on that, but I am in the middle of a 4-17 run since the Sweet 16.
Ooh.
And it's very tough. And you know me, I am not the type of person that's going to lose five and then fire five more. I pull back, I sit on the sidelines, and I really pick my spots. And I'm not in a mental pretzel right now, but it feels like everything I touch. I had the Brewers last night, which I learned this morning actually was a wash because there was a pitching change. Brewers are up 2-1 in the eighth, give up a two-run homer to the Cubs, who haven't hit a home run pretty much all year. That's the way it's going, and it's very tough to navigate those waters because it does happen to everybody.
It does, and I said this for years, man. You got to learn how to lose before you know how to win. And then when you win, it's so temporary. I mean, you can have a good season and you think you know everything. You can go on a 17-4 run, flip your run, and you know, you're walking on walking on air. And I saw it in the book for years. There were guys that just consistently showed up, and it's literally the all about the process. And when you go on these bad runs, sometimes you got to question your process. Maybe I'm just looking at the wrong stuff. Maybe, you know, I mean, everything is going against me, but am I making good bets? I don't know. And that's when you start to maybe question how you get to what you get to. And also, it's okay to be like, you know, maybe I'm just not good at this sport. Like I've accepted the fact a long time ago that I'm probably too smart for my own good, like with college basketball. There's just, it's just not my thing. I love it. And I love to pick my spots and play it, but I just know that I'd rather not have the aggravation in my life because I don't enjoy the wins at all. And I suffer over the losses. So I'm like, yeah, you know what, let me just stick to the pros and we'll go from there. So I think it's a really good lesson. I mean, in life, let alone in the book, where sometimes I just am not right or I'm not running good. It's okay.
I've weaned off of the sports I don't do well in, though. I don't bet the NBA until the playoffs because I can't keep anything in order in the regular season. I don't know who cares. I don't know who's healthy. I don't know who gives a shit. I have no idea. So I sort of cross off the NBA until you get to the postseason. It's a lot easier for me to handicap the NBA when everybody gives a damn. But there was a game yesterday, and I'm sort of looking at what I did, and I feel completely good about it, even though it was a loser. I went under 7.5 minus 15 on the Nationals and the Cardinals. The game closes 7/30. Now, the Cardinals score 14 runs and I lose the bet, but if I can beat the market by a half run, I feel good about that, Dave.
Yeah, I don't know, Sammy. Like this beating the market thing, it's you want to beat the market, but I've seen a lot of guys beat the market and not win. And I'll take winners first and foremost. You got to beat the market consistently, but it's not the be all end all
correct
that it's perceived to be. And so like, and that's what's exploding with this whole gambling thing going everywhere. Well, I beat the market. Well, okay, did you win? I mean, that's good. And you consistently beat the market. That's good. But at the same time, I say it always from the book's perspective. Sometimes the market's bad. Like there's just a bad line and it's just wrong. I mean, you know, let's go back to Sunday at the Masters. I mean, Matsuyama's got a 4-stroke lead on a bunch of guys that have never won except for, you know, I mean, like Xander's close, but he can't close. And you know, Zalatoris is an up and coming. Okay. He's got a 4-stroke lead and he's Sunday at the Masters. It's minus 105 or even money Sunday morning. I mean, that was one of those ones where I was getting texts from guys that I haven't heard from in 3-4 months. Like, Dave, check this line. Is that right? I woke up, but the sun wasn't even up yet in Vegas. I looked and I said, well, that can't be right. That's just wrong. I bet it myself. Now, whether it wins or loses, it beat the market, but there's sometimes the market's wrong. So, I mean, it's just one of those things. It's just a lot of talk about beating the market. And I would cautiously say there's a lot of guys that have been investors for years that beat the market and they're broke. So it's not the be all end all that it's advertised to be. And it's a good thing. But you got to win the bet too.
It's still an interesting conversation to have, though. And I'm totally with you. The most important thing of the whole sports betting pie is the results. That's everything. Do you win? Do you lose? But I would argue over a year, 2-year sample size, if you beat the market more times than not, you're in a great position.
Correct. I would agree with that statement. You're definitely in a better position. And then, you know, you have situations come up where you know, you get a late inning, 2-out home run in the top of the ninth. It doesn't mean anything, but it pushes the game over while it was a dead under to the last out. You can't control those. You can control beating the market. You really can't control the results.
The best players you saw when you're behind the counter, and I know everybody does this differently. There are multiple ways to skin this shit. Just generally speaking, what did the guys who usually won, the guys you usually handed money back to, how did they play?
They were so specialized in what they did. They didn't just play every day. They, like you said it just a couple minutes ago, you pick your spots. They knew what they were good at but they knew what was not their thing. And they, you know, the best guys were like, you know, the golf matchup guys. I mean, you just knew that they were going to collect. You just knew. I mean, this first five baseball thing has just come out now with a lot of different things and, you know, even shows that I've been on, and they're like, hey, I should bet the first five. Listen, the sharpest baseball bettors in the world have been betting the first five for a decade. They've been hammering this thing. Like, those were the guys. They didn't pick sides and totals and games. They got you first five totals. That's why the limits are the lowest, because they are better at them, because that's the only thing they're looking at. They're not looking at NFL draft props, but the guys that are looking at NFL draft props, man, they're annihilating it. They're not just beating the market. They're actually cashing the tickets too. So specialize. Those were the guys that won. The grinders that were there every day, man, they had good seasons here and there. They had good runs. They had bad runs. That's the hardest ones. The other thing those guys did was they were not afraid to lose too. They made as many bad bets as they did good bets. They just won a little bit more. I mean, the best bettors in the world, Sammy, would hold, I don't know, 3% of their volume. I mean, you figure it out. It's $1 million in action. What's 3% of $1 million? That's a hard life, but that's what they did.
The hardest thing about betting for me is not betting.
Oh.
Just taking a breather and not having the need to, oh, shit, the Rockies are on in 20 minutes and I'm bored. I had a couple tequilas. I'm ready. That's the hardest part for a lot of my audience. I've been through it myself. When I was 18, 19, 20, 21, even up to 25, I would bet on anything and everything. And the older I got, the smarter I got, because I started talking to guys like you who actually know what they're talking about. But the hardest part for a lot of people, Dave, if they win three games, they got to bet three more. If they lose three games, they got to bet three more.
I feel like I'm watching you grow up in front of my eyes right now, Sammy.
Just, is there a tear rolling down your face?
Listen, I got misty eyed. I'm not bullshitting you. Like, that was really, but that was so well said. I don't even know what to add. That is so true. There is, I've actually, you know, even dumbed it down even more, but I mean, I got, you know, everything going on and life challenges with, you know, family and kids. And so you can't bet every day. If you're going to be in it every day, you better be in it. Like, in the mud, in the shit pipe that, you know, Andy Dufresne crawls through. You got to be crawling through it every day if you're going to be really good at it. And if you're not, you probably should take a step back. What I do now when I'm really in the mood, or I think I'm really dialed into something, is I bet a game in game. I may make 20 bets. If I'm watching a game, I'm sitting there and I'm betting it, and then I'm changing in position. I'm doing this. It's basically day trading. It's crazy. And I know I couldn't do it every day because I did it in the book for a couple of years. I was booking the in-game stuff, and I would come home like a wrung out towel. Like, it is so hard. So I think you can actually be a better bettor by betting less and less often. And I think you'll see yourself, your results get better.
I love that you brought up the in-game stuff. I watched, and I want to talk about the Super Bowl Sunday we had after this, because this sort of leans right into that drinking day that we had. Ooh, boy. I'm in the back of the Superbook with Sammons and Murray and Sherman and Byers and all these guys, and I'll never forget this. We're about 4 minutes into the second quarter, and Ed Sammons turns to me and says, Tampa's going to win by double digits. And I said, well, wait a minute. I said, how? Why? He said, they are getting destroyed in the trenches. I said, Ed, there's only been 18, 19 minutes played. He said, I don't care. Tampa Bay is going to win this game, and they're going to win it easily. Now, I don't know that this is all in a vacuum, but the man is one for one as far as Super Bowl live in-play opinions in my world. I was just fascinated that he watched 18 minutes of football, and he could see that.
It's one of those things that when you're watching the game, especially after you've, you know, sat in the back in a risk room and taking bets and seeing things, you have to get better at it. You have to learn to know what you're looking at. And I was in that room, you know, I was in the drunk room in there while you were in the back room, and I'm sitting there with Kelly and the whole crew that was in there. And they're like, Dave, is it time to bet Kansas City yet? I'm like, no. I said, I don't know. And they're like, well, how about now? I'm like, no, I know you want to. And I know that, you know, when the favorite gets down, you're supposed to bet the favorite. I said, not yet. No, there was never a time where I thought, all right, maybe when it got to halftime, but then that touchdown before the half iced it for me. I'm like, this is over. I was pissed because I wanted a good game, but I was like, this is over. And I thought, all right, people are going to just dump all in on Kansas City on this halftime. Like, this is crazy. I didn't bet it myself. I was like, no, there's still not a time where you're going to do that. So I think you can learn so much from watching the games, but watching the in-game lines as well, because you kind of get an idea maybe what a computer algorithm thinks. But you also, when there's guys booking it, you get their opinion too. And the best part about it is you don't have to make a play. When you put the line out in the book, you got to take the bets. That's why you're there. But it's awesome. And at the same time, it's really intense. And I think that was a good way for you to kind of get a look into it from, you know, behind the curtain. And that's kind of the way I've done it my whole life. So I don't really know any different. I think like the book way, way too much. It's ingrained in me from the time, I guess I was a little kid, I can't get rid of it. But I think it helps the process, and that's what this whole thing is about, is just getting better so you end up with better results.
I started picking up what Sammons was throwing down, though, after the first half was complete, and then after I closed my laptop and walked back into the clubhouse to get hammered, the line started to form, and I opened the door to the clubhouse, and you tapped me on the shoulder, and you pointed to the line that was around the fucking corner, and you said, all of those motherfuckers are about to bet cheap second half. And they did. And they all lost.
Oh, and it's one of those that you know what's coming. In the book, you just keep writing the bets. Make sure you keep the line moving. And you just know. And it was pretty evident in the second half early while we were kind of boozing it up and hanging out and just trying to have a good time that – oh, this thing's done, man. Anyone that had Kansas City, you know, I think, did you have a future on KC?
I had 6-1. That was the only thing I was sweating. And I didn't hedge it because I didn't feel like it. I had already gotten that far. Yeah, I could have taken Tampa +3. But at that point, I had the first quarter under, first half under, game under, no opening touchback. I needed the kick to come out of the end zone. So I had a good day. And I had a great day at the drinking window.
Yeah, that was a good day. It was a good weekend in general, but that was a great day. And it was one that I won't forget again. And it was my first one, not in a book in 17 years. And I was with you everyone else. It was a lot of fun. And another example of how this all can be fun and be successful and have a good day and all of it. It was a great time.
Did you think I could drink that much?
No. Are you fucking kidding me, Sammy? I mean, like, wow, I've heard the stories. I never experienced it in person. And I was like, wow. I mean, I kept leaning over to the girls. I'm like, is he good? They're like, he's just getting started. I'm like, what?
He's warming up.
What? Yeah, that's what I said. How long is this going to go? I mean, I had to send, Jess and the kids a text. I'm like, listen, I'm going to be a while. I'm with Sammy P. I mean, we knew that, if there was going to be a meeting at the can or something like that, like this the way it could go. But man, I would have lost because if you'd have given me like, I don't know, whatever number it wasn't high enough. I was really impressed, not just with you in general, but man, you can put it down, brother. Holy crap.
I did feel bad though when I was telling a story, and when I start having a couple, I start getting animated and I feel the need to, over move my arms and legs and everything. I'm mid story. Oh. I trip over a chair and kick Paulie Walnuts right in the jaw.
Right. Paulie Walnuts took a shot. He jumped right up. I got to give him credit, but I fell over almost pissing myself laughing. I'm like, what did you just do? Paulie didn't see it. Nobody saw it coming. It was a flash. It was a flash hook and you caught him good, but I was trying
to show how I was impersonating somebody who took a spill. Only when I took a spill, there was a chair in the way. I knocked the chair over. I do a backflip and kick Paul right in the jaw. I'm like, Paul, I am so sorry. He's Don't worry about it. Just, you know, don't let it happen again.
No, right. Yeah, it was just one of those where you were laying there for a second on the floor. Like, did I just do that? I mean, it was almost like one of those UFC kicks. Like, that would have been replayed. I will never forget it. Now that you brought it up, I'm laughing right now. But he just got up and he was rubbing his chin. You remember, he's looking at you and he's thinking, man, I Sammy, you're my boy, but I'd kick your ass if you ever do that again. Like, I was thinking, in my head, I'm doing what I do every day. I'm making a line. I'm like, Sammy's got the height and the reach, but Paulie's tough. I don't know. This would be a good line.
You always have to take a peek at the underdog that's scrappy, though, and has something to prove. And that situation, Paulie definitely had something to prove here. We got a couple minutes left. Dave Sherapin joining us on Chicken Dinner. What's been the toughest adjustment for you as you left the bookmaking space and now entered the media space? Your talent, your media.
Yeah, I can't believe it. I never would have thought it. And that's maybe one of the biggest underdog tickets that I've cashed in a long time. What do I miss? I don't miss the grind. I don't miss, you know, the aggravation that comes with the job. What do I miss? I miss booking the games. And I miss being with the boys, because I'm that guy that I'm the glue guy in the room. I'm talking to everybody, and I love sports. So I'm around it every day, and I get to kind of sprinkle my opinion into a line and then see the results and get that instantaneous feedback. So I miss the end of the night when you hit grade and you get that report printed. How did you do? I miss that. That's the thing I miss most, is like, you know, all right, how'd we do today? Well, we lost, you know, 85 dimes today, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Why? And then the next day, you know, all right, how'd we do today? Oh, we won six figures. Good. Okay. And then you start to pile up the days and turns into a week and then the month. So I miss the measuring the daily, that, but,
well, what's hard for you about media? Fun. Yeah, like, what's challenging about the media side? I know what you are behind the book, but when you get the microphone in front of you, what are you still learning in that life?
Oh, man, I'm learning every day. I mean, but I'm a student of life. I love school. I love learning. I love reading. I love listening to people. And one of the biggest things that I have to learn right now is like time management. I mean, you know, because I want to do a show and I want to talk to that person and I want to, you know, then learn more about them. And it's like, hey, man, you got to move on to the next show. Just like in the book, there's another game. Like, you just won a six-figure decision on this game. All right, well, there's another game that you got to get this first period graded. You got to go. So it's kind of like one of those things, like the media is also a hustle and you got to just keep grinding. But my thing is, I make relationships and I make connections with a lot of people. So I guess one of the challenges is like, hey, it's not for everybody either. Like, you can't be everybody's friend. And what you can't even, like, sometimes you say stuff that's most ridiculous shit in the world to someone else, they're going to hate you no matter what. Well, that's fine. Like, you know, God bless you too. I mean, it's just like getting cut off in traffic. You're going to let that asshole that cut you off in traffic ruin your day? Hell no. I'm having a good day every day, dude. Today is the day. 7 months ago today, Sammy, is the day I walked out of the hospital after the stroke.
Oof.
7 months from today. So I was 8 hours from dead. I mean, that's what the doctor said. Or maybe I said it like that. He may have not put it in so bluntly, but I was like, man, I was 8 hours from dead. That might be the title of the book. I'm not sure yet, but since I walked out of that hospital, let me tell you, I walked out of that fucking hospital like I pimp walked it out. I mean, Conor McGregor got nothing on my pimp walk out of the hospital, and hugged my wife and hugged my kids. And I was like, man, this is it. Like, I'm not looking back. So the media gig is that, and it's fun. I'm glad I get to share the story and be on shows like this and do my own, you know, podcast and do all these other things. I mean, I was just on Hammer Down to talk to Pat McAfee yesterday. Like, and that was fun because I had already talked to him in the book. So it's all coming full circle, man. It's been a blast.
Well, I'm very happy that you're healthy and you're feeling it, and that's all gravy. And I know your wife was nervous because she was wondering who I was in your phone when you had the stroke, because you and I think were on the phone like minutes before or texting or whatever. But I'm so happy that you're feeling good and that you're healthy. Let's bring this full circle. You talked about the plays earlier. PASPA goes down May of 2018, and now we're legal in almost 30 states. We're live in about 22, 23. I am still amazed by how many people have plays. Everybody's got plays, Dave. And we have a buddy who spent a night in the drunk tank, and the guy in the can loved the Eagles. You know, everybody's got plays.
They all do. Listen, this goes back to my time in Curacao. I mean, and I even learned it, you know, as a little kid in high school, the mailman had plays. And I played in a weekly card game every Sunday with a bartender, a barber, a mailman, and two guys. One was a golf pro, and one, I'm not sure to this day what he did. He was just one of those guys, but he showed up. And the mailman was bringing us plays every week from, and it was from Beano Cook. He delivered Beano Cook's mail, and Beano gave him a play. So then we had, his nickname was the Hat, because he wore a hat every day. So the Hat has a play. Well, the play, where's the Hat getting the play from? Well, it's from Beano. He delivered the mail, and on Thursday, Beano would give him a play for the weekend, and he would give it to us. So everybody's got plays. It's all about the plays, of course. But the process of getting the plays is the story. And that's so much fun. It's fun again, where, you know, when you're in the grind and you're in the muck in the book, maybe it wasn't so fun. And there's probably a lot of guys that are in it that maybe they're not having fun, but I can tell you this, I'm having fucking fun every day again. And I love it.
One of the best storytellers in the business, longtime odds maker, Curacao, Las Vegas. He is Dave Sherapin. Please follow right now on Twitter at SportsbookConsig. SportsBKConsig. I always enjoy talking to you, whether it's on this, whether it's on the cell phone for 45 minutes, whether it's whatever we end up talking about. It's a pleasure. You're one of the best guys, and I think your growth in this space will only continue. And I hope when you're doing it, wherever you end up full time, you just wear that soft-ass chicken dinner hoodie maybe once a month on the show, okay?
I'm wearing it now. You told me this thing was audio only. I mean, I had to take a picture to screen, but I was all excited. I'm like, man, that is a soft-ass hoodie, and I love it. And every time I wear it, Samuel, I get a comment like, what is that? I'm like, you don't know about chicken dinner? This is one of the best podcasts in the country. If you listen to anything, you got to put this in your ecosystem immediately. So you got it, brother. Hey, this is, again, one of the best things about this media thing is meeting great people in the business and finding the lights of just in life in general. Our friendship is just beginning, buddy. I really appreciate all you've done with me, our phone conversations, our text threads. The La Basura is for life. It is for life. And I can't thank you enough.
I'll see you this summer, bud. Take care.
Can't wait. See you, brother.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Record check 115, 105, and 4. We are up 0.8 units, and we have one play in the kitty. We're going Mets Phillies under 3.5 runs in the first five innings. We shall see what we get with the Braves against the Cubs this weekend as we try and churn some more butter and roll into the weekend. Coming up on the show Tuesday, we'll talk to Sarah Perlman from NBC Sports and PointsBet. We used to do a weekly spot together when she was one of the hosts of The Daily Line. Sarah's been in the space for some years now, and we'll talk all things sports betting with Sarah Perlman coming up next week. Cash of tickets, make some money. We'll talk to you next week right here on Chicken Dinner. Fire brimstone.